Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Power to Be You and Rise to Win for Our Youth Movement. I am Sandra Bueno, and I am coming to you live from West Palm Beach, Florida. Today's one-hour show will be an opportunity for you to be a part of change and transformation, empowerment, awareness. And this is a show that will be highlighting a situation that we are all very much aware about, the homeless plight, but this is taking you into a different area of understanding as well as exposure for you to become a part of change and a part of movement with my guests and what they represent and who they represent. Together with me, I have author David Gelzer, who has written a book entitled Underbelly. Underbelly is a book that features the homeless situation in West Palm Beach, one of the most affluent communities here in Florida and in the nation. And then I also have with me the founder and creator of Art and Compassion, Inc., which is a nonprofit organization that serves and ministers the community of homeless population of Florida, especially South Florida. And Olga Smith is a minister, but she's also the founder, along with her husband, Marvin Smith. And together, they've worked on this book, bringing it to light, sharing with us really what is at the heart and what personal stories are represented via the people who most of the times are not noticed or avoided. So I would like at this moment to introduce Olga as well as David. Both of you, are you on the show?
Yes, I'm here, Sandra, and thank you for inviting us on.
Oh, hi, welcome, Santa. David. Hello, Olga. Thank you so much, because I am very just excited, but I'm also honored because both of you and Marvin as well have done such an amazing, just amazing work, and your compassion as well as your passion for your work and your ministry just shows. So I would like to start with Olga. Olga, if you can share with the audience your organization once again, and what is it that you do specifically, please?
Art and Compassion, we use the arts to minister to the people here in the streets of West Palm Beach. We bring the compassion of Christ right to them. We feed twice a week at two local parks, Centennial Square, which is outside of the West Palm Beach Library, and Curry Park on Sunday mornings. And the main goal is to build relationships with the people and help them to get off the street and into programs to stop the cycle of homelessness and
now,
addiction.
What ages do you also do?
Well, Sandra, there are children that come out. There are teenagers that come out, young adults, men, women, people of all ages come out.
And you are also helping not just the homeless, but you also the working poor.
That's right. Not just the homeless, but the working poor of the area. They do come out also.
How do you define working poor?
Working poor are people that are having a hard time making ends meet. People that are being laid off, people that, single moms, all types of people that are out here that are very poor, that live in the community right across from Palm Beach. You know, there's a lot of monies on the other side, and there's a lot of poor people on this side. So these are the working poor.
And how long have you been working in this area with Art and Compassion?
We started in 1996. We became incorporated 5 years ago.
And you also use art as a source of outreach. How is that incorporated?
Dance, drama, different things. It's mostly our daughter Melissa that's been doing it with us. And once in a while, we do have other young people that come out and share their art form. And art is something, you know, Sandra, there is no barrier. You know, when it comes to the arts, you can reach so many people. And we've learned that through the arts, it's a way of keeping people from behind bars. You know, we have three daughters that thank God we never had any problems with drugs or anything, you know, that teenagers get in trouble with out in the streets. So it's something that when you share the arts with them, you can say so many things to a person and they hear the same message over and over again, but when they see something visual, a dance, a song, a skit, it stays with them.
And I know that this is, you do so much more than just feed and minister through the arts. And this is where David is able to shed so much light and so much truth and honesty. And it's, David, your book has really affected my life in such a way. And when I met Olga and Marvin, that was the area where I was coming into, which was just a few weeks ago. And your book, Underbelly, is such an incredible rendition of an area that I believe the community is not really, doesn't really understand and can't see, because none of us are really able to go behind the scenes. And together, David and Olga, you have been able to create a landscape that offers a view from, you know, an authentic view, a riveting view, and, you know, a view that really truly exposes what's going on. And it also allows the reader to say, you know, what can I do, or to actually see areas in their lives where they can see themselves helping and helping transitions to occur. So what I'd like to say is, before I bring David on, I'd just like to share with you a little bit of David's background, as he calls himself a serial entrepreneur that moved to Florida to enjoy his semi-retirement, and what he discovered in the land of wealth and privilege, an underbelly of our society, the homeless. David has been working within the communications and writing background, and he decided to use his talents to get this message out. And it is noted that all proceeds of this book go to fund Art and Compassion's ministry, as well as outreach. And Underbelly happens to be David's second book. The first book was on hypnosis. Additionally, David is also writing a true crime book, and the topic is a murder that took place in southern Florida a few years ago, and this should be out a year from now. David also has been married 28 years with 2 grown children and 3 dogs, and he feels that working with Art and Compassion is his way to give back. David, once again, thank you, and I honor you for your work.
Oh, thank you very much. And let me say that I'm very touched that the book touched you, and that's really the idea. The book was kind of conceived in discussions I was having with Olga and Marvin, and there was a fellow whose name is Terry Walters, and he was literally dying in Good Samaritan Hospital. And I went and I interviewed him and photographed him, and I was going to originally just do some photo essay book, kind of show in pictures mainly, but in a few words, what the problem was that exists not only in Palm Beach but all over the country. Homelessness is a big problem, and we can talk a lot about that. But when I did Terry's story, and I came back and I put it together, it really touched me, and I was there, and I showed it to a couple people, and they were very touched by it. And so the book is a series of 22 stories told in first person from the perspective of people that are on the street. Most of these people have very sad stories and sad endings. There are a couple of success stories, quote-unquote, but it's a very, very direct and honest look at the problem told again in first person. And may I say that if people want to find out about Art and Compassion and about the book, probably the easiest way to do it is to go to a website that we've set up called hopeandpromise.org. So that's one word, hopeandpromise.org. And not only can they find out about Art and Compassion, and if they would like to learn more, there's a phone number. If they would like to make a donation, they can do it online. And they can also be linked to the book if they'd like to know more about Underbelly.
Now, how was the book made possible? Because these stories, like you said, they're first person, and they are honest. I mean, they really reveal, you know, without any excuse and without any florid language, they are what is. And how, Olga, if you could answer, how was this book made possible?
Well, again, like I said before, building relationships, you know, these people that are featured in the book, for the most part, we have built relationships with them. And they don't open up just to anyone to share their stories with them. But since they saw David, you know, Sunday after Sunday coming out to the park with us and serving them, not judging them, loving on them, they opened up. We just sat there, you know, wherever they were at, whether it was on a mattress behind an abandoned building or in a tent, you know, in the woods, they opened up and they shared their stories. We had prayed for years. I have personally prayed for years, you know, for the face of the homeless not to be invisible anymore, for them to be real. I was very frustrated. And God sent us an angel, which I call, you know, David Gilipter was our angel that God sent to give a name, a voice, a face to these people, that they are human beings. And that's how the stories came about, because of them trusting us and David. They were able to open up and share their most intimate details about their lives.
Yes, and yeah. It was very painful. I mean, there was a lot of crying, and people literally telling us things that they had never talked about before, and it was cathartic to them. But I think it's very enlightening to anybody that would like to find out the severity of the problem. And again, not just Palm Beach, even though it focuses on one area. This is a book that translates the problem. The problem itself translates anywhere you are in the United States.
And you know what was interesting recently? Someone asked me when I brought to light Underbelly. They asked me, they were from a different county, and they said that the homeless in Palm Beach are usually transported to Broward. Something to that effect, so that Palm Beach doesn't show that they have a wide homeless population. And I didn't really know, but I know that in your book there is a page where you sent this book to I believe a couple of the political officers in our county, and you had a response, or maybe you didn't even have a response. Can you share that?
Well, sure. I won't mention any names, but there are actually a number of people in a county and a city government that are very supportive of what we're doing. But there are also people that are not, and it comes down to one very simple, very obvious, a very sad fact, which is that homeless people don't vote. And so what a lot of politicians care about are voters, and they care about getting reelected. And so they try to put the situation aside. They try to pretend like it doesn't exist, sweep it under the carpet. And Palm Beach County just approved a 10-year plan. And not to get too technical here, but there's no money for it. So it's a wonderful, wonderful plan. It would be like designing the Taj Mahal and not having any money to build it. It really doesn't make any sense. But there are other counties like Broward who have an assessment center and are doing things to help homeless people. So I would say that the county is not shipping people to different parts of the state, but I'd say that homeless people recognize that there's not a lot of services that are being made available to them, and so they are seeking those services in other areas, which is really a shame. There was an interesting article, Sandra, in the paper yesterday, a very brief article, that Palm Beach, the city of Palm Beach out on the island, just nixed $75,000 that they had earmarked for feral cats for their care. And, of course, there's been some talk, and in fact, a friend of mine, Larry Lehmer, has a book coming out about what Palm Beach Society is really all about. And there's balls that are held, you know, with tons of money raised for feral cats. No money for homeless. There's no money to help the homeless. And it's a very unfortunate situation. I was talking to a psychologist a couple days ago, and he actually made a very good point. He said that, you know, one of the biggest problems that ever happened was when somebody came up with the name homeless, because it implies that if we can only find homes for these people, all their problems will go away, as though that's the only thing that we're dealing with. And unfortunately, people don't consciously make a decision to become homeless. It's not like somebody wakes up one morning and says, you know something, I think as a career move, I'm going to be homeless. So this is something that happens to people over a long, long period of time. In fact, some of the people in the book are second, third, fourth generation homeless. They have generational poverty. And we are not addressing the needs. Of course, in Palm Beach County, we're not even addressing the most basic of needs, which is shelter. So it is a big problem. It's a growing problem. And unfortunately, the government doesn't want to have to address it. And it's only going to get more critical, of course, as economic conditions put a squeeze on budgets. So Olga and Marvin, when I first met them, for the first few years, they were sending 50 people into treatment programs. And that's one of the great things that happens. They send people into these programs, and I've seen it change their lives. Last year, they sent 100 people into programs. And I don't even know what's going to happen this year. It's a problem that is only being dealt with by either religious organizations or private funding, and the governmental organizations are just washing their hands of the problem and turning a blind eye to it.
I thank you so much for clarifying that and for taking this angle and presenting it for the community to understand that it is, you know, and you've really pointed out the specific areas where, you know, it is not a career choice, and the generational poverty, whereas, and I know that in your book, for example, one of the actual interviews was of a mom who had, at that time, she was in, like you said, there are really no shelters for people to go to, and she was in this one church that basically, it's the only one place in our community where you know, as far as I know, where these people are actually going to, and here she was with her children, with four children and a child on the way. And to me, as a reader and as a person who really lives her life to be able to help youth, I say, you know, how can children grow up if this is what you are witnessing? And you are here amidst people who some might have a heroin addiction, others might be on crack. You know, you might have a prostitute, you might have an elderly person. You know, and like you said, it's generational. And like Olga mentioned when I first met her, these people are being, you know, they're born here, they live here, and they die here. And what I would like to also share, in addition to what you both are saying, is that today we are seeing children who will drop out of school, for example, because their parents have lost their homes and these kids cannot even change clothing, and because of fear of being ridiculed and laughed at. And I have heard these stories coming out of the juvenile justice administrators who will say the kids are not, you know, are letting go of school. They're unable to continue with their studies. They are homeless. They are walking around with their parents. And, you know, this is where we must step up and create a bridge where people who are on the outside of the homeless plight can now come in and contribute, whether they contribute resources, they contribute teaching, they contribute skills, they contribute, you know, awareness, because without an influx of new psychology and of just a new way of doing things, the homeless cannot help themselves. You know, it's already hard enough to figure out, how am I going to get food on the table? How am I going to pay for my home if people are not equipped with the skills to deal with life? So, you know, I just this is really where the three of us, I believe, are creating an impact, because if the community doesn't know what they can do, then nothing will be done. And it is about the community awareness and about grassroots movements taking place within the community. And I know that, David, this your book is perfect for this. It is an amazing rendition in a window that allows the community to look at and say, oh, this is really what's going on. And Marvin and Olga, you guys are the hands-on. I mean, you guys are the soul. You guys are the feet. You guys are the heart of God going in and really giving love and restitution to a community of people that normally would be just overlooked. So, Olga, I would love for you to share with us, you know, some of the stories that you've heard when people have called your organization that have just moved you because you realize, you know, they're where they're at?
You know, Sandra, lately we've been getting a lot of calls, like you were saying, of young people that are dropping out of school because of the situation that their family's in. This week I've had two calls. One was a young man, St. Lucie County, calling from a halfway house. Mother and father were evicted from their home. The father took off, mother living out of the car. The young man doesn't know what to do, so ended up going to the hospital, having a nervous breakdown. Had never been on psychotropic medicines or anything like that, but this is what he's looking at now. Doesn't know how he's going to be able to go to school, where his mom is at. Doesn't know where the father took off to. And a couple of days ago, I had a lady calling me because her son brought a classmate home with him that is homeless. The parents lost everything. This young man doesn't want to drop out of high school. He's a senior. He's 18 years old. She doesn't know what to do. She's a single mom herself with two sons. So she calls me to see how can we help. She can't afford to keep this other child in the home. So, you know, she went to the school, spoke with the principal there, and when she mentioned to the young man, we need to speak to other people to get you help, he got scared, and he didn't come stay with her that night. And these are young people that are out there that they don't have a place to shower, they don't have, like you said, extra clothes to wear to go to school, and they don't want to be ridiculed, so they're dropping out of school. And we as community, as families, as men and women, we need to be hands-on. We need to take care of these people, be a village. Just like there's a story in the book of Mark Messina. He likes to be called Marcus. I spoke with Mark last night, and Mark was one of those young people lost here in Palm Beach County. He was homeless. He was being taken advantage of. And not only did we, you know, meet Mark, but we brought him home. And I don't recommend this for everyone, but we did bring Mark to live with us, and he is one of, you know, the story in the book. He's a good result came out of what happened in Mark's life after, you know, stabbing someone, being in jail. His, you know, when you go back to the beginning of the story, I'm getting ahead of myself here, how he saw his father gunned down, how he became, you know, a gang member. And today, Mark is a youth leader. He has CDs out. He's a positive story, but it took a family like ours to take Mark in to see how can we best help Mark, and it took a community, you know, people in the church to come around Mark and see what his needs were. And now there's a bunch of young people out here that are lost without a vision, without a mentor, families without resources, and we need to take care of these people and take care of their needs, not walk away, not look away, but look at the reality and see what can we do. What can we do as a community?
Sandra, can I mention that if people want to read about Marcus's story, they can do it for free on the internet, and it'll give them a little glimpse into what the book is about and what the problem is about. If they go to underbelly-thebook.com, then they can click down below. There's a link to Marcus's story, and there's other information that they can find about the book and about homelessness. And there's again, they can also go to hopeandpromise.org to find out more about Art and Compassion.
Well, David, how did you? I know you mentioned in the beginning the story that you actually witnessed the gentleman that was in the hospital, but what went into you that allowed you to get into this place where you actually started writing this book, and what drove you? What was the emotion that your source, your fuel?
Well, I had been working with Olga and Marvin, and what had happened is my son had an addiction problem, and he had been arrested, and I was told by one of his counselors that I needed to go into my own recovery. I needed to go to Al-Anon. And by the way, my son has been clean and sober for 3 years. But the process of learning about myself, one of the things that Al-Anon recommends, and Al-Anon is a program for people that are friends or family of of people that are alcoholics or people that have addiction issues. And so they say that you should do service work. So it just so happened that there was a guy by the name of Ray, and Ray was at the Al-Anon meeting with his wife, and he said, why don't you come over our house for lunch? And it had been the first Al-Anon meeting that I went to down in Florida. And then he said, hey, we feed people on Sundays. Why don't you come out? So I said, okay, well, you know, seems like God is telling me that I should be doing this. So I came out on Sunday, and then I just kept coming out. And by the way, that was the one and only meeting that I saw Ray at. So it was just one of those crazy coincidences. And I would see the problem, and I admit that I would come, and I would feed, and I would go home, and I really didn't speak too much to the people. But then as I got to know Marvin and Olga, and I saw the work that they're doing, and I saw the love and the care and the compassion that they had, I was trying to find a way to get the message out. And so we talked, we'd have discussions, and the idea of the book came about. And then, as I said, it kind of just evolved. I didn't start out saying, well, I'm going to make it the kind of book that it is. Again, it was going to be more of a photo essay book. But then, the one story happened, and then Olga's kind of downplaying the fact that she just has an incredible ability to work with people and to get them to open up and to tell their stories. And so it kind of snowballed. There's one story and another story and another story. And we were working on this thing 7 days a week. And the next thing you knew, we had a book. And I think it is also representative of a lot of what you see with the homeless. It's not just one type of story. It's all different types of stories from all different angles. We have people that were veterans. We have people that were crack addicts and prostitutes and drug dealers and gang members and you name it. And it's really a cross-section of what the homeless is like, which is really a cross-section of what people in society are like. And I think that's the whole thing, is that at the end of the day, we can call them anything we want, but they're human beings. They happen to be people that are in desperate situations and people that may not have everything that we have. But that's the whole thing, is they still have hopes and dreams. I mean, their hopes and dreams might be different than ours. Ours might be for our kids to become doctors and lawyers and Indian chiefs and whatever else that we're hoping for, and, you know, a home and a car and this and that. And for most homeless people, it's some place to sleep and some place to feed them, and then they go on to the next day. Or, you know, it's to get the crack rock that they need to get to the next hour. And so I remember we did a story about one young lady, and she literally was on the street hooking in order to be able to get enough money to pay for the one night of the motel and to pay for some crack and then smoke the crack and then come back out and get some more money and get some crack. We as a society can't just say, well, we don't approve of what they're doing. We have to say these are human beings. We have to love them and care about them and do something about them. And if we, you know, again, to go back to the feral cat story, you know, if we have money for feral cats, I think we can find a way to have money for the homeless. We're spending, Palm Beach County is spending something like $150 million to expand the prison system, the jails. And the reason we're doing that is because we're arresting more people. And the reason we're arresting more people is that we're not addressing the fundamental issues that exist in our society. And so with homeless people, when you're in the kind of environment they're in, when you're around the kind of people that they happen to be around because of the neighborhoods and the associations that they have to make, then these people are going to have problems. They're going to get arrested. They're going to get into the justice system. That we have money for. But, you know, we have to get to the point where we're willing to say that we're going to deal with it on the front end. There's a classic story about an aid organization that flies over to Africa, and they drop seeds from a plane. And, of course, they come back a year later, and they hope that there's these big crops that are going to exist. And as they're flying over, they notice that it's barren ground, and they land the plane at the first location, and they said, what happened to the seeds? And they said, we ate them. And it's the same thing here. You know, we have to get to the fundamental root causes of homelessness, and address those. And we can as a society, and we should. If we are the land of the home and the free, we have to be able to deal with everybody. It's not just the land of the home and the free for those who deserve it. Everybody deserves it.
And I will tell you, I'd like to bridge that, what you have said, because you've touched upon, even when you share your story of how you began, you know, you had your son who was involved, and you, you know, you come from a different side of the tracks, let's say. Let's offer this picture, you know, and at the end of the day, it's, we can never say as human beings, we will never be there, because I will tell you personally, I have been in that situation where I did not have food. I have been in that situation where I did not have a home. When I became pregnant, I was a single parent, and I, where I was working, I could no longer work pregnant. At that time, I had been working as a flight attendant, and the only people that were there in my life were my parents. And had it not been for them who offered me that bridge of transitioning from when I could no longer fly at 7 months to when I would actually have my child at 9 months, and, you know, and waiting for one extra month after you actually have a child. During those 4 months, outside of going from house to house through friends, I really didn't have any other place to go. And I, you know, and we will also look outside into the economy, and we can say, you know, Americans, and I've heard this before, and in the news it has been said, Americans are two paychecks away from being homeless. If you look at your life, you look at your finances, you look at your economy, you look at what it takes to run the household that you're running and to run the needs that you must meet and the obligations that you have, you know, picture yourself not having a paycheck, or your husband or wife not having a paycheck for 2 or 3 months, falling ill. You might find yourself in that place where all of a sudden you don't have a place to go. And like Olga has said before, you are increasingly having more and more calls of people who no longer have a home. Without a home, you have nowhere to go. And if you have nowhere else to go, what do you do? And that is what we are seeing, you know, and I think we're seeing more of it now, because we're realizing, you know, our generation, We didn't think this could happen. And now we are having children who are now a product of our own choosing, our own decisions. And I can also, you know, bring, offer this this add-on. Another girlfriend of mine who is a deputy with the sheriff's department, her job is to actually deliver these notices of eviction. And she will share with me stories, story after story, even of a family. The man worked for 28 years, and he was let go of his job. She had to evict him and his wife. They had nowhere to go. They didn't know what was going to happen. I think they were, you know, close to being in their 60s. And, you know, you might find yourself in this situation not knowing. And this is where it gets real, because it's not just, you know, a part of society that are rejected. It's really any of us can be there. And we can make a difference. We can stop what's going on by bringing in education, by bringing in skills, by giving people options that normally would not have any. And this is where a community organization like Art and Compassion, a business, you know, like your company, David, you know, because you have a company now, but you are an author, you brought light to the subject, you partner with Art and Compassion. Now I've come in, and it's, okay, increasingly we are raising awareness, we are providing, you know, an avenue for where people can actually say, okay, maybe this is what I can do. I can use my time. I can use my service. And even, you know, accepting. Now, David, you have a story in your book that is unique. There was a gentleman that you interviewed who is an unlikely person to be homeless. Can you share that story? Do you know who I'm talking about?
Talking about Steve Johnson. And
exactly.
Let me say that, you know, the expression that really applies here is that, but for the grace of God go any of us. And it's really true. I mean, we've seen the most extreme, which is when Bernie Madoff ripped off all these investors for $50 billion. There are people in Palm Beach. There are people I know in my development. I live in one of these gated communities, and supposedly everybody here is supposed to be very comfortable. There are people that literally stuck their keys on the kitchen table and walked out the door. These are people that are, you know, they don't know what they're going to do. You know, people that have never faced homelessness, and now they're going to be facing struggles that they never thought that they would. So in Steve's case, Steve was one of the Johnsons from Johnson & Johnson. He had trust funds. He had the best education. He went to school in Switzerland. and he became an alcoholic, and his life was spinning down and down and down. And one day he was mooching off of a friend, and his friend said, you know, I've had enough, and he literally put him in the car, and he dropped him off. I don't even think he stopped the car, dropped him off in front of Westgate Tabernacle. And so here's Steve, this 50-ish white guy, very preppy, he's still carrying his tennis rackets, and he's got to deal with a slice of society that he's never seen before. And he made a remarkable recovery. In fact, he is one of the principal forces still working at that church and still trying to give back, and he's turned his life around. So he is one of the success stories in the book. But I'm sure that, you know, when he was living in his townhouse in New York and he was jetting off on his vacations and doing all the things that he was doing, he never anticipated what was going to happen. And I think most people out there say, well, it's never going to happen to me. But then again, you know, it has happened to a lot of people. And what I would say is that if people want to really find out more about homelessness, the first thing they should do is come down and involve themselves in an organization that is doing something to work with the homeless. It's nice to write a check, and it makes you feel good. And, of course, Art and Compassion would love for you to write a check if you would like. And we'd love for you to buy the book because that money goes to Art and Compassion. But we also love for people to come down where we feed every Sunday in Curry Park, which is off of Flagler, right by Good Samaritan Hospital, just north of Good Samaritan. Find out for yourself, or go to other organizations. There's wonderful organizations. There's St. Anne's Place, there's the Lord's Place, but come down, find out what it's about. See the problem for yourself. Homelessness is not that person standing on the street corner begging for $5 to buy a sandwich, which, by the way, they're not going to do. They're going to buy a six-pack of beer, or they're going to buy a crack rock. So, you know, if you see somebody that's homeless on the street and they're begging, and they want something, buy them a sandwich. Take them over, or buy a sandwich and bring it to them, or give them the name of a place that will assist them. But that's not really homelessness. Homelessness is much bigger than that. There are over 4,000 people in Palm Beach County that on any given day are homeless. There are over 800,000 people in the United States that are homeless on any given day, and during the year, there'll be 3 or 4 million people in the United States. 3 or 4 million people, that's 1% of the population, that at some point this year will find themselves homeless. So we've got to get involved. If we don't get involved now, when are we going to get involved? And who's going to take care of the problem, if not people listening to this right now? Don't leave it to the politicians, because we know what they do, which is very little. We have to deal with the situation ourselves. And you know, there's nothing better than giving back. I think it's wonderful to get, but it's actually much more fulfilling to give, and this is a way for people to give. And I've invited many of my friends to come down, and they do, and they stay. They come and they come back, and they find it to be very rewarding. And there's just something about it that it's very spiritual. And then Olga and Marvin make it even more spiritual by not only feeding people in the belly, but feeding their souls. And it's almost like a party to me. It's just a great time. I think people will you'll have an opportunity. If you want to sit down and speak to somebody that's homeless, you'll find out that they're really not very different than any of us. It's just that they happen to have fallen into something that they're having a very difficult time getting out from under, and it'll be very uplifting for you. And I think that the listeners out there will find that it will change their lives. And I hope that they will do something about it. That's the most important thing, is getting people involved.
I will add to that when I went there on Sunday, right prior to Christmas, and we distributed the toys, and it was really interesting that Olga, when I asked Olga, I said, Olga, what would you like me to help you with? She gives me stickers, and she goes, here, give these to the kids. And while they're waiting online to sign up. And it was funny because initially when I first took the stickers, I said, okay, you know, very, very jovially, I said, okay, I'm going to go help. And the minute I went down and, you know, to get to the level of that child, I remember my heart was so moved because I immediately looked at a child's face and I said, you know, this is a child. This is a child who has to be here. And this is a child who right now can be learning, or a child who has their full potential ahead of them. And unless we go in there and stop the cycle and break the patterns and infuse that environment with, you know, newness and with joy and with love and with compassion and with evolution and with purpose and with vision, these children are going to have to go and relive the same and take the same steps and do the same thing that they've seen others around them in that environment do. And when Olga gave me those stickers, I'm like, Olga knew exactly why she did it, you know, because I saw myself in them and I saw my opportunity in them and I saw the outreach that I have to do to be able to inspire other people to get involved. So whether people get involved working behind the scenes, working directly with the homeless, working within the administrative, working within the financial area, whatever it is that people can do, you are going to indirectly impact the lives of our kids who we all agree are our future. And right now we are, you know, right at the brink of an inauguration that is talking about change, talking about the community getting together. You know, it's time that people stop talking, and it's time that people who want to participate in change and who want to be part of the legacy to join, and to join, you know, organizations and to join people and stand behind a movement to really help out our brothers and sisters and give them, you know, what they might not have, or give them a hand up and say, listen, you know, be thankful for where we are that we may not have to go there, or be thankful that there are people who are willing to put their lives out, like Olga and Marvin, every single day to, you know, help people. So for me, I get so emotional because it's like, you know, when it comes to children, that's my whole purpose. But I recognize that it is, you know, it is a ministry, and it's something that we can all participate in. And what's also interesting is that where Olga and Marvin hold their feedings and their outreach is at right at on Flagler, downtown West Palm Beach. And you mentioned this, David, in your book, where it's right at the footsteps of these opulent buildings and these businesses and these yachts. And actually, 2 weeks from now, I believe, they're having an exhibition right on Flagler Park, which is for all these beautiful cars. And immediately, you know, the background of having what's going on there, you know, with a parallel to this event, is such a contradiction.
Yeah,
you know, it's a dichotomy.
Yeah, the biggest juxtaposition is the cover of the book. It's a homeless man that was, it's not a stage picture. I was walking under the Okeechobee Road Bridge that leads to Palm Beach, the island of Palm Beach. It's the busiest of the bridges, the middle bridge. And there was a gentleman sleeping under the bridge. So here you have people driving to their Meisner Estates, driving to Worth Avenue, going to lunch at Taboo, doing all the things that they're doing, really oblivious, and I'm not blaming them, but really oblivious to the fact that there's a man sleeping right underneath their feet, so to speak, and that's you know, that's a very sad tale, but it does exist, and you know you have to kind of laugh sometimes because you're feeding homeless people as yachts are driving by in the water, and you can't get any more irony than that.
You're so right, and like I said, your book is just such a perfect window for people to really be able to look into and see the reality and see the practicality behind it. And with Olga, where are you right now within Art and Compassion? What's going on that you can share with us?
You know, Sandra, this Monday for Martin Luther King's birthday, we're going to be feeding at the Salvation Army in West Palm. The city of West Palm Beach called us to join forces with us to do a homeless, not just for the homeless, but hungry and homeless people at noontime on Monday. And you also touched on change, Sandra. And I know that in David's book, he talks a lot about change before this new administration. And you touched on that. And I wanted to say, it is not for government to change everything in the world. People are looking to the new administration as if that's God, and that is not God. In each one of us, God deposited the instruments, the things that we need as a human being to bring change to whatever the problem is. So we're looking to the new administration like, oh my gosh, you know, those are the saviors. Now everything is going to be okay. No, It is within each one of us. We've been given the instruments. We're all holding on to something that God wants to bring out of us to use to bring change to other people, to make the situation different and better. So let's look to ourselves and say, okay, God, what have you placed within me?
Thank you. Thank you for saying that, because it is so true. People look at an institution and a structure as the answer, and the answer cannot take place without effective soldiers going out into the community. And like you say, we all have it inside of us to be able to step out of where we are and to go and get involved. And I thank you for sharing that part, because, you know, one thing that grows out of that statement is that we are in our society here, especially in America, where we all have a right to an opinion, and we're, you know, we can all openly express what we believe in. You know, one of the things that I always remark is how people are so ready to defend, you know, another human being's perspective or what the law that another human being creates, but yet people are also ready to downplay the law that God has put in our hearts and in our lives as human beings. And that is something that I find, again, you know, an irony, because, you know, as human beings, there is a higher force above us directing us. And when we fail to see that, then we're always, you know, in the dark. And you have really made it, you know, made your point with realizing that, yes, God has put these abilities in all of us to go and go where the need is. So thank you for sharing that, and thank you for sharing what's going on Monday, because I'm actually privy through the there's an organization here that you obviously probably know about. It's the Daily Bread Food Bank that works with about 800 other nonprofits to distribute food, and they were just involved with the administration's new initiative to create a awareness and a movement for hunger relief and for hunger elimination. And, you know, because it's not just the homeless, it's also everyday people not having enough food to feed their families and children who are in school. It's a quite a high number of children who make up part of their statistics. And they are in our community, so I will be putting them into contact with you. And I think that, you know, it's just great to be able to extend the outreach and the mission. So is there something else that you would like to share as far as where Art and Compassion is or what people can do to support you?
Well, Art and Compassion, we're here. We're local in West Palm Beach, but like David has mentioned before, the best way is to go to the website, hopeandpromise.org. And I really would like to encourage people to go on the link there for the Underbelly book and pick up a copy. Pick up a copy. I know that everyone is talking about recession and economics, but this will be a very good investment. You're investing in the lives of others, and this will make a change in people's lives forever. The cost of a book, you know, you say, well, I don't have $1,000, I don't have $100. By purchasing a book, that seed that you're planting will be planted in somebody's life. That money will be used to help feed people, to help people get into programs. David had mentioned that 2008, we were able to send 100 people into programs. Yes, we did send 100 people into programs, but there were at least 200 people that were not able to go into programs because we didn't have the monies to send them. So I'm encouraging your listeners to get a copy of the book. Get a copy of the book, and I'm telling you, you will not be able to put it down once you start reading these stories.
What I'd like to say with David, I have two questions for you, David. How did you sleep? Because when I read the book, you know, and I wanted to get more stories in, I had to stop because it was like, okay, I need to take a break. I need to, my head and my heart needs to, you know, have a little bit of a clearing. But when I first read your book, I couldn't sleep. I woke at 2 in the morning, and I had to go sit there in the living room and read the book, you know, because I needed to know more. And it was just this awakening within me that I wondered about you when you were actually coming across these stories. How did you sleep?
I think you found a new market for me. I'm going to sell the book to long-haul truckers who want to stay awake at night. But you know, when you put your journalistic hat on and you're you're in the middle of doing the interview, you really can't think about the emotion because you have to ask the questions, you have to listen. But when I would go home and transcribe the stories and put the stories together for the book, it was very hard. I would wake up many times, you know, kind of in a cold sweat and be thinking about it. And of course, you know, just had spent time with this person. And it's difficult. It's very, very difficult. I know when I showed a draft of the book to my daughter, she said, you know, Dad, I can only read two or three stories at a time because it's really hard to absorb all of the sadness that exists. But it is the truth, and that's the most important thing. It's not sugar-coated. It's not telling part of their story. It's people really opening up. And I will say that, you know, you watch television and you get solicited in the mail and by phone and other means for all these very worthwhile organizations around the world, and a lot of them deal with children, and we feel sadness and we feel empathy and we want to help out, but we have these problems that exist right here, right in the listener's backyard. And speaking of Palm Beach, I know that the average age of a homeless person is, I believe, 9 years old, because there's so many children that that bring that average down. And the average lifespan of a homeless male is 45 years old. We have two people in the book that one was 45, one was 47 that died. And there's a young lady that's in the book. I say young. I believe Olga will, I'll ask Olga to talk about it, but she died last Thursday. And I believe she was 41 or 42 years old. So if people want to help somebody and help them to not only have a new life but live their life, you know, this is a way to do it. We talk about the tragedies that exist in other places like Haiti and Afghanistan, where the lifespan of a male adult is 45. But that's happening with the homeless population. So we can address that right now. We can deal with that problem, and we can change people's lives, and we can really do that with very, very little, with people getting behind the program and saying, I'm going to make change. You know, come down to Curry Park around 10:45, so you can help us set up the tents, if you would, please, on Sunday. And stay until we have to put the tents away. But seriously, if people want to find out more, then, you know, definitely read the book. Definitely go on to the website, hopeandpromise.org. And by the way, Olga is very modest, so I will say it for her. We're always in desperate need of money. If somebody sends $200, and you could do it through PayPal on the website, you will be sending somebody into a one-year treatment program. So $200 will take and change somebody's life, hopefully forever. And I know that that's a lot of money to ask of somebody. So get a group of people together and donate $200 and change somebody's life. Or come down and help us defeat. Do whatever you can do. I think that you'll feel good about yourself. It's not just about helping somebody else, but it's about helping yourself to feel better about us making change. And I voted for Barack, and I really feel that he is what John Kennedy was to us when we were younger. But we can't depend on government, as Olga said, to make change. We have to do it ourselves. And sometimes people take on big dreams and try to change the world. Let's not try to do that. Just one person helping one homeless person, one person coming down and helping to feed or helping us to get involved in the programs that we get involved in, and we can take the homeless population and make big changes, big differences, and young people, maybe we can stop the cycle of poverty and homelessness and addiction and hunger and all the other problems that we're dealing with, unfortunately, in these troubled times.
And what I'll say, I'd like to let the audience know as well that, David, you actually financed this book. I believe that, you know.
I did, but, you know, the money is not the important thing. The important thing is getting the message out.
Yeah, see, that's like you said, you spoke of Olga, you know, being too modest, and I speak of you being too modest, so it goes around where, you know, it must be noted, because really, it, you know, when you step out there and you make a difference, you do what it takes, and it is about doing it, and like you said also, we can't change the world, but we can start with one person, and when we can take a model, and we can take an initiative, and we can take a community and come together, we can create something that the rest of the nation can look at. And I believe that this is, you know, I am committed to making this happen. And like I've had a lot of different guests, and I've already mentioned to them, and Olga already knows, you will be a part of, you know, David, whether you know it or not, but you both are part of the Rise to Win for Our Youth movement and the one-day showcase that I will be hosting March 21st at the West Palm Beach Convention Center, because you just said it, $200 for treatment. Well, the way to engage our youth who are actually now, you know, able to exist, they are the ones who can take this world forward. And when we can plug them into an outreach mission, or when we can plug them into an organization that's already working within a sector that needs help and that needs transformation, this is where these kids are going to engage and see, oh, wow, I count. And you know what? I can make a difference. So what you have just said with the $200, that already is an outreach opportunity for a school to get involved with and say, you know what? Let's help our own community. Let's raise funds. Let's be creative. Let's do something where we can actually come and support what our Find Compassion is doing, you know, and create for ourselves a path forward. So thank you for raising that. Thank you for sharing that. And you know, we're actually coming down to the end of our show, but I just really want to thank you both and honor you both, because you guys are truly beacons for change. You guys are amazing, and I am just so spirited about your work and the influence that you have, your conviction, and your passion. So to both of you, and to Marvin, and to the staff that works with Art and Compassion, who volunteered their time, just thank you on behalf of the audience and on behalf of the people who will be listening to this, because we are stepping out and you guys are role models.
Well, thank you, Sandra, for being willing to address a very difficult subject. But with your help and the help of the audience, hopefully we can make change happen.
Well, we will see that. I can definitely say from personal development and the conviction of God, change is happening. And to use the words of Barack Obama, change is here. So it all it takes is the conviction and our willing desire to really, you know, step out there and do it little by little. But together we can. I heard something recently. I actually read something on a wall. It said, we may not have it all together, but together we have it all.
Absolutely. I read something in an Al-Anon book that said, opportunity is nowhere. And then you separate nowhere into N-O-W and H-E-R-E, and it's opportunity is now here. And so if people want to, opportunity is now here.
Excellent. And Olga, what can you share with us at the end, your parting sweet words?
Well, I was going to say amen to what you guys were both saying. And I want to say here, Sandra, that I'm very thankful that you caught the vision once you met us. And David, I will forever be grateful for everything that you've done for Art and Compassion and for our family. Words cannot express our gratitude.
Well, thank you both so much. It has been an incredible pleasure. And thank you for coming on Blog Talk. Thank you for coming on this show. And just, you know, for right now, we'll just leave it as is and just, you know that we're definitely going to go out there, and you guys are already doing it. So thank you, and then I will speak to you both soon, and, you know, have an awesome, awesome weekend. And to the Blog Talk audience and to everyone else, thank you for joining us today, and stay tuned, because you will be meeting a lot of the people who are stepping in to make a difference, because together we can, and now is here. So thank you again.